Welcome to F1 Debrief episode 93, Cars for 5-year-olds. Coming up this week, we discuss Mosley's lunch, Cars' secrets and complaints at Croft. There was no show last week because we went to a secret location.
We did.
And actually, it's a lot more secret than we anticipated, so it's going to be a quiet show.
We can't talk about it.
No.
We can't talk about it at all.
We can talk a little bit about what we learnt, but not so much where we were and how we found these things out.
Okay.
It's going to be a bit of a techie show as well.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Sebastian Bourdais as he's confirmed as Toro Rosso's second driver. All I can say is woot.
Now, the guy absolutely has to deliver. He's had his 1 year. He's had his rookie introduction. We've given him a lot of benefit of the doubt. We've campaigned for a long time for him to get this seat. We think he's the right man for the job, but now he's got to turn around and make something happen in 2009. If that man doesn't beat Buemi, he doesn't deserve the seat.
But he's also got to do it and compete in Le Mans, apparently.
Well, yeah, he signed up for that too. Whether or not he intended to do both, or whether he realised he would be doing both, I don't know. But it shouldn't affect him too much, should it? He's got not too much practice to get going, and he's done it before, so he's just got to sit in the car and drive.
It's been a bad week for the super licence debate as the GPDA have gone public. They've officially released a statement dismissing the suggestion by Mosley that it's all a fuss about nothing. The GPDA say they don't want drivers providing a revenue stream for the sport. It should be treated as a licence fee.
Sounds reasonable to me, actually. As far as I can see, their argument is they should be funding the administration of the licences and not trying to make up some kind of shortfall in the FIA's funds. They have got a lot of money, but it's not their problem that the FIA is running out of money.
It's been a good week for Stepney and Coughlin as the restrictions on them working in motorsport have been lifted. Apparently, the lawyers of one of the pair wrote to Mosley saying, if McLaren and Ferrari are best friends forever now, it seems wrong to keep these guys from working. Mosley decided that was fair as they were just minor players in the grand scheme of things.
Rubbish. Oh. Absolute rubbish.
Okay.
Apparently, a certain Mr. Mike Coughlin is now working for a company called Ricardo.
I've heard of them.
Ricardo were recommended by the FIA as the company, or one of a trio of companies, to make the standardised transmission and KERS system for 2010. So there's Max Mosley recommending that everybody use equipment designed or in partly associated with Mike Coughlin. I think he's just realised this and thought, oh, balls.
He's backed himself into a corner.
He just backed himself into a corner and suddenly gone, actually, nah, it's all right. Well, I'll tell you what, it wasn't ever Mike's fault. He's just one small guy and it wasn't him. The whole thing, just forget about that. You know, all that dossier, it's not really that important. And yay for Ricardo.
It's been a bad week for Europe as BMW have upped sticks and decided to test in Bahrain rather than Jerez, and Toyota are encouraging other teams to do the same. It's all very well getting value for your testing miles and money, but we'll have no racing left soon.
In Europe?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, we had some pretty terrible weather during the last test. Look at what went on in the Algarve. It's not used to having rain there, and basically every single session was a washout. I did notice on the Renault blog that the trucks were struggling to get out of England in the snow to get to Jerez. So I would say anybody going to Bahrain, that they've got their smart shoes on this week.
News and views.
Most of the news this week has come from Mr. Max Mosley. He held a lunch for selected journalists and basically talked about everything and anything. James Allen has great coverage of this on his blog, which, by the way, we're loving.
Big fans of Mr. James Allen. He's found himself a new little niche. I can't see for the life of me how he's ever going to make any money out of it.
No.
But therefore, you know,
if it keeps him writing, though, that's the main thing.
It's given him some profile in the internet world.
So some of the points that he brought up, Mosley gave the impression he'll be running again when his term expires this year. Not surprising at all. And apparently all the people involved want him to run again as well. The aim of the cost cutting is to get spending down from the £300 million mark to under £100 million, maybe even as low as 50 for independent teams. That is a hell of a saving.
If that happens, that makes Formula One accessible for an awful lot more people than it's currently able to do.
True.
Whether or not, I mean, it's a laudable figure to try and aim for. I don't believe that they're going to manage that. I mean, they're talking about €65 million as the base price for entering Formula One. On the plus side, we'll get loads more useless teams and incompetent people running around at the back. On the downside, you're going to have to standardise so many parts that it's not going to be Formula One anymore.
He didn't seem that bothered that loads of people are going to be losing their jobs.
Well, he wouldn't be. He's keeping his.
Also, the future seems to be two distinct areas of the car, the bits that are up for development, like energy recovery, and the bits that aren't, they're going to be standard, including chassis, engine, gearbox, drivetrain, everything.
It's a spec series, then.
Yeah.
Unless you're really, really, really excited about KERS, and you think that a fight amongst competitors over who can make the best KERS boxes is really worth watching, he's heading for a 100% Formula One spec series.
Max said medals aren't the answer to overtaking, and he says the new regulations won't work either, which is apparently all the overtaking working group's fault, because they were charged with coming up with the new regs, and he doesn't think they're going to work.
Well, see, I think he's bitter about the overtaking working group, because he originally came up with the centerline downwash wing generator thing, which was awful. It was a misguided and badly implemented strategy. It looked ugly, and it was, you know, it was never going to work. The overtaking working group appeared as a result of that not working. So I'm thinking he's hoping that the overtaking working group are going to fail so they can bring back his silly wing.
And a few other bits and bobs. Customer cars are still allowed. He knows who set him up last year, and it was someone in F1. He rates Honda's chances at 70% and said that if the MSA come to him because Donington is a disaster, then the FIA will try and help save the British GP.
See, he says that now, and he also says try. It doesn't offer any guarantees. He was talking to a room full of British motorsport journalists,
yep,
including James Allen and others. I would imagine he would say exactly what they want to hear. I also wonder if he's not trying to wind up Bernie there, because Bernie clearly has no interest in returning to Silverstone, doesn't like the BRDC, doesn't want anything to do with him anymore. If Donington falls through, it might be Max's interest to push the Formula One, the British Grand Prix, back to Silverstone in order to upset Bernie. I don't think he's doing it for any reasons other than to either annoy people or to make himself feel better.
The other big news of the week comes in the form of a potential new team called USF1. There's been a lot of speculation and rumours and will they, won't they, flying around. And to be honest, I don't know what to believe and what not to.
The rumours were first mentioned Christmas of 2007. Then they came to light again summer of last year that potentially there would be a Honda B team based in America. And it seems like the same people are behind USF1. And they decided instead of going down the Honda route, that they're going to do it by themselves.
This week, the rumours started because there was a website popped up and it had a nice pretty logo on it.
Yes.
So we were all like, they must be ready.
Mm.
If there's a logo. I think Stephen Roy said that. Then Pit Pass reported that they'd already submitted an entry to be on the grid,
yep,
in 2010.
Yes.
And now GrandPrix.com have a lot more information. They say that Gene Haas, who is a giant in the tool manufacturing world, he is being released from prison in May after serving 16 months for tax evasion. Sounds like a nice guy.
Mm.
But supposedly he could be behind the project because he's got lots of money and the time to fund such a thing. It would be based in Charlotte with a European base in Spain, and there are already engineers and designers being lined up.
Well, Max has said that he's been approached to see if an entry is viable for 2010. He's heard from his man in the States, which is Nick Kroll, that it's basically a legitimate entry. And therefore, he thinks, you know, it's viable and it's likely to go ahead. He also said that they may be joined by another team in 2010.
He said there'll be 12 teams by then, and he wants Bernie to split the revenue between all 12, doesn't he?
Well, that's not going to go down well with the teams. The teams already want more money,
yeah,
from Bernie, not less. And if you split it, 10 into 12 is going to give them much less. You're going to have... Bernie's not going to... is never wanted to do that because he wants to encourage people to fight for the... to the front.
He doesn't want people just turning up to get money.
Collecting earnings for not competing. So he's going to be against it. Again, you may argue that Max is just trying to wind up Bernie and the teams and FOTA with this. So I don't know whether there's going to be 12 teams. Who's going to be the 12th?
Well, if
USF1
Honda,
are going to be the...
Honda make 10 if they get bored. USF1 makes 11. So who is the 12th? And, I mean, who's going to drive for USF1? Who's going to drive for this supposed other team?
Yep. Is it going to be in any way competitive if it's designed in the States, if it's potentially built in Europe?
Seems to be quite far away from where the action is.
Everything,
isn't it?
There's no Canadian Grand Prix. There's no US Grand Prix. Formula One isn't in North America at the moment.
Do you think it would go back if this team appeared?
I don't think it's going to make the slightest bit of difference.
Well, Force India, they're going to get an Indian Grand Prix now, aren't they?
Well, yes.
Supposedly.
I don't know if Malley is still going to be in it by the time we get an Indian Formula One Grand Prix. I think he's going to throw in the towel long before then. But yeah, there is that association. I do wonder with, I believe it was mentioned in the comments, but I can't remember who suggested it in the week, but with Force India F1 and US F1, we've got a spec series potentially coming from Max. Are we not just looking at A1GP
here?
It
is. It's turning into A1GP.
It is, isn't it?
Great.
There's not going to be, I mean...
And there won't be a GB F1.
No, absolutely not.
Sidepod Tour. Last weekend, we met up with longtime listener Bob, who invited us to a talk about KERS.
We have to say thank you.
Absolutely,
Bob.
Yes.
He is a bit of a legend.
Now, we had intended this to be a big side pod tour production, but actually, it's all quite hush-hush. We can't talk about where we were, who we were with, but we do have some snippets of information to share with you.
Yeah, we couldn't record anything, which we weren't expecting. And we thought we might be able to get a couple of interviews done. But it is, we did receive an awful lot of inside information, an awful lot of things we can't talk about. I should also mention that a lot of what we were given needs more research. And I think it's probably going to need some kind of diagrams as well. So expect what we're giving you here is a bit of an overview.
Diagrams aren't good on audio shows.
No, in the blog this week or maybe next week, depends on how long it takes to go through it, we'll have lots more information on what we learned and curse and things that we can talk about off air and not live. So that will come later. But this is just a bit of an overview of all the things we picked up last week when we couldn't do a show.
A good place to start is with, you know, what is curse? And on Friday, Red Bull released a preview of the RB5. It was a great video animation and it explained curse really well. So we've got a bit of audio from there. I mean, you really need to see the video because it's great. And there'll
we'll
be
a link
in the show notes. But here is a little bit of audio of Vettel describing what curse is.
It'll be exciting to see which teams use curse. Curse recovers wasted kinetic energy generated under braking. It is converted into electrical energy by a generator and stored in a battery. For a boost of up to 6.5 seconds per lap with an extra 82 horsepower. All at once or in bursts for blocking. But press it too early without enough grip and you'll spin off.
That is a wonderful animation from Red Bull. They put an awful lot of effort into it. I love what they've done. And if it didn't make any sense in audio, you definitely got to watch the video because, I mean, I think, was it Dave from Red Bull described it as Kurz described in a way that even my granny can understand?
Yeah, it's Kurz for five-year-olds.
There you go. That's exactly what you need.
The first thing we learned on our side pod tour is that the new regulations have utterly screwed the original concept of Kurz.
They have, yep.
The energy recovery is all designed to come from the rear brakes, but now the rear wings are fugly and the front wings are bricks, so there's very little grip at the back anyway.
Yep.
And reduced downforce means lots of oversteers and cars spinning and the rear wheels are doing nothing, hence no input for curves.
Yeah, I think as I understand it, as the car goes into a braking zone, because the rear wheels are unloaded, they're not doing as much as now the front wheels are doing. Kurz is working on the back wheels, and most of the time they're going to be free spinning. When the driver gets to press his Kurz button and give himself a bit of a boost, that's obviously going to be applied to the rear wheels, which again have less grip than they would have done in previous years, the less grip than they had last year. And it seems like the regulation changes suggested by the overtaking working group are detrimental to the introduction of curves.
Which I thought might be the case when they first started introducing all these different things. I think I said that, you know, if you're doing a proper science experiment, you need to change one
absolutely
thing at a time. You
yes.
know,
how the introduction, can you tell? The introduction of slicks and maybe plus curves this year would have been useful. To then go around messing around with all the aero at the same time, it's not as helpful, and it means that we're not going to get to see as much energy recovered as possibly we otherwise would have. Scott just pointed out in the comments that apart from overtaking on the straights, Kurz is basically pointless, which isn't strictly true, because at the start it has a use, especially. There's not an awful lot of energy that can get built up on the warm-up lap, but if drivers are really, really clever with warming up their tyres, they may get a bit of an advantage off the start line. You can see all the drivers going into the first corner with unloaded rear tyres, hitting the Kurz button, and literally all spinning off in sync. It's going to be spectacular start to
Australia
the early Grand Prix.
Is going to be ridiculous.
First corner pile-up, it's just going to be 20, hopefully 20 cars, or 18 cars just in a big heap.
We did get it confirmed that the driver has to initiate the boost, so the energy won't
yes,
be continuously fed through.
There was talk earlier that potentially teams have found a better way or more efficient way of delivering curves throughout the whole of the lap by applying it gently and precisely, but no, it has to come from the driver. I did notice something interesting on a Renault steering wheel this week. They have three curves buttons, and presumably if Red Bull are using the Renault curves system, they have three. It's not entirely clear what the other two are for. One's the driver boost button, and one seems to be a charge and a discharge switch, and we don't really know exactly what
maybe
that's for.
Maybe for safety.
It's not entirely. It could be that. And apparently the pits will instruct the drivers when to press those buttons. They've really only got one button to give them the boost. So there's still a lot more to learn in that area, and I think Renault's the only steering wheel we've seen.
For viewers, 2009 looks like it's going to be rubbish, and we're not going to know what's going on, but 2010 could be better. There's talk of the wheel rims lighting up.
That would be spectacular.
Maybe something on the nose. Red or green. So red for when it's recovering and then green when it's being delivered.
We're seriously going to struggle as fans and viewers in 2009. We're going to struggle to see what's going on when it's going on.
Yes.
Because the systems aren't in place. You can't have this lighting system until you have standardized curves. While everyone's developing their own systems, working on their own systems, moving things around, maybe running, may not be running it and stuff like that. It's very hard for for the director and for the computer graphics to tell us what's going on. It may get better as the year progresses, but I suspect at the start we're going to be completely blind as to who's running KERS, what sort of KERS they're running, how much energy recovery they're getting, and when the drivers are pressing it. It's going to be black art guessing what's going on. Additionally, we've got movable front wings, and we're not going to know what position they're in at the start of the season, which is a shame because we're missing out on a lot of information and it's going to take a long time for the systems to catch up.
Well, while you're on the subject of movable flaps, we did also learn that they're really not good enough. Six degrees is just nothing.
The front wing can be controlled by 6 degrees by the driver. Now, if you're talking purely in terms of KERS, an ideal KERS system, that is achieving very little. I mean, it's not going to make much difference to the driver. But in terms of KERS, what you really want is great big barn doors flying up when the car comes into a braking zone to really slam, you know, to slow that car down as fast as possible to build up that energy recovery.
A big parachute coming out the back, that might be good.
Every corner, that would be brilliant. Yeah. That would be perfect if you're trying to promote KERS and get lots and lots of energy recovery going on into the system. At the moment, that little flap is not doing a lot. And with unloaded rear wheels, it's actually probably making the system worse.
It's a start, though, I suppose.
It's a step in the right direction. I suspect from what we heard last weekend, we're going to see more in terms of aero movement and movable aerodynamic devices, because cars need to be slippery in a straight line, and they need to be very, very big when it comes to stopping the darn things. So we're likely to see movable rear wings and potentially more flip-ups and barge porch movement as Formula One progresses in the next couple of years.
So we've got three types of KERS. I thought there was only two, but we've learned of a new one.
Well, there's actually, in use in Formula One, there's three. There's more than that even available.
In real life. Development.
In the outside world, outside of the bubble, it's Formula One.
Yeah.
There are many types of KERS systems available. It looks like Formula One has gone for two plus a hybrid of the two.
We've got mechanical, electrical, and the system that Williams are apparently using, which is a hybrid of both electromechanical.
Yes.
See what they did there.
Well, confused us,
yeah.
I think, because I was assuming that all the teams were going electrical, except for Williams, who were going mechanical, because they have a flywheel system.
Yeah, battery.
Yeah, whereas all the other teams, they convert their mechanical energy into electrical storage and store everything in a battery.
Yes.
Williams do it slightly differently. They have mechanical energy stored in an electrical flywheel, which acts in a similar way to a battery, but is more efficient and better than a battery because you don't have to destroy it after every race and it doesn't cost a fortune to make. Batteries are inherently very, very bad for the environment. It's not good at all.
Yeah, they get shipped over from God knows where.
Yeah.
And then used once.
Yes, and then buried. I mean, this is the same problem that the Tesla Roadster suffers from. After 80,000 miles, you basically dig a hole, you stick the battery in it, and you cover it up, and you buy another battery, which costs a fortune. With the Williams system, it's much better because it uses a flywheel to store electrical energy. Therefore, I think it lasts longer, it's better for the environment, and it costs less to build. So they've got, but it's still electrical. It's not actually stored as mechanical energy.
Toyota would like to use the mechanical flywheel solution because generally it's considered better, it's less dangerous, it gets more for your money.
Yes.
But they use the battery in their road cars,
right,
in the Prius.
Yes. So to everyday people, Toyota are using battery for KERS, electrical KERS.
So they don't want to make the Prius look inefficient and ridiculous by using a better solution in Formula One.
So it's marketing.
It doesn't look good, does it, if you use two different systems?
So if the system you're selling to the general public is known to be inefficient and not as good and slightly dangerous.
Yeah.
That's a bit embarrassing. I wonder if, you know, Max has suddenly come out recently and said, actually, we're going to ban all these electrical systems.
He wasn't a fan of the batteries.
He said, yeah, this is not going to happen. I want it to be, you know, I want more innovation and it's not what I was looking for in the first place. And therefore, we may end up banning them. And we couldn't figure this out because it was like, well,
you brought it in.
Yeah, you suggested it. All the teams have spent all this money working on it. Why are you now going to ban it? I wonder, and this is me purely putting two and two together here, but yeah. I wonder if Toyota haven't gone to Max and said, listen, if you banned the electrical, we could go public with the mechanical.
So they can say to their road cars,
yes,
people, they can say, well, you know, we can't do
batteries
it.
Batteries are still
Formula
good,
One.
But Formula One is banned batteries. So from a marketing point of view, they don't look stupid. But from a technical point of view, it's still, you know, it still works and they can still have the best system. Because if Williams do really have the best system and that their flywheel storage, electrical storage is the best, and the batteries really are inefficient, expensive, and a complete nightmare to transport around, everyone else is going to look a bit silly come the first race of the year if Williams debut it and they're good and they're reliable and everyone else is using these systems because of marketing reasons alone. They're building in a level of inefficiency deliberately, which is making them slower.
In the comments, Stephen Royce just said, I thought the Williams was completely mechanical, no batteries involved.
That's correct.
There aren't batteries involved. No. It's just got electricity.
It's, yes, mechanical converted to electrical, stored as electric until the power button is pressed, and then the electric is converted back to mechanical and applied to the rear wheels. I can tell you that in the Williams system, and I can quote this for you, because I don't really know what it means. It's from Williams Hybrid, and it says that the flywheel is electrically driven and can be considered an electromechanical battery, which can replace a conventional battery or ultra-capacitor pack in a hybrid system. So what it's basically saying...
That's a lot of big words.
You take out the battery, and you put in this, which is... It acts like a massive capacitor. That's the best way of describing it. That's a good way of describing it. It's a temporary storage, so it charges up really, really quickly, whereas a battery charges up quite slowly, and it releases its energy really, really quickly, but it doesn't have any long-term storage. So it's like...
Which is perfect for this, because it's on every lap, isn't it?
Yeah.
You store and that, you use it.
It's a couple of... Isn't it a couple of corners? Can you apply it? How many times can you apply it a lap? There's a limit to how it can be applied.
6 seconds or something, isn't it?
Yeah. So what basically, it will build up for a short amount of time. And the problem I think you're going to have is, will it be able to maintain that storage for a long lap? So will it work in Spa? As well as it works in a shorter lap, say Monaco. So it will vary from race to race on which one's more efficient. You might find that a battery that stores energy for a long period of time can build up, especially if you've got a race with not that many hard braking corners. A battery might be more efficient in certain circumstances because it can contain multiple laps of storage, and it can build them up and it can hold it in the battery for a period of time and then release it in one go. Whereas the Williams system, it sounds like it worked very, very well on a heavy braking circuit where it just stores the energy temporarily and then delivers it very quickly.
Did you know that Side Podcast puts out two versions of this show? One is an MP3 file playable on almost all music players. The other we call the Enhanced Podcast. This works best on iPods, iTunes, and other Apple solutions and includes images, chapters for quick navigation, and links to the stuff we're talking about. Visit sidepodcast.com/feeds for more information. On the subject of circuits, the tracks with a lot of braking are obviously going to be most suited to KERS. So yes. Monaco is good, and Canada would have been
Canada
brilliant.
Would have been excellent. And how annoying is it that that one's gone? That would have been the prime example for showcasing who has the best KERS systems out there, because it appears halfway through the calendar, exactly when teams will be just getting up to speed and getting things organised and really nailing it on the head. And now it's gone.
Imola, not that good because it's so fast. So there is the possibility that teams might make different versions of KERS, like baby KERS, if you will.
Baby KERS is a good concept, actually. You heard it here first. Keep that baby KERS phrase in mind, because I Googled it and I couldn't find anything of any use related to Formula One on the web. I've never come across this before, and I'm quite excited by this. Explain to me the concept of baby KERS.
Well, the idea is that if you're at a track where you're not going to get as much recovery, so say you're at Imola, you might want to use a smaller version of KERS because you don't need all that weight if you're not going to get as much back.
So you take smaller batteries.
Smaller, baby KERS.
Not only then are teams developing potentially a battery-based system and also considering looking into a mechanical system, they are potentially building multiple sizes.
It's possible. I mean, we don't know that for sure.
Baby KERS,
it's a concept.
That's something. This is interesting. I haven't come across this anywhere, and I've sourced through Race Car Engineering, who normally know everything about this sort of stuff, couldn't find any reference to it there. So it'll be really interesting to see which teams. I mean, like, we're going to be clueless, aren't we? When these teams hit the track, we are going to be absolutely clueless. So they run an electrical, mechanical, big, small, baby. No one's going to have a clue. It's nice that it's variable. I wonder if it's variable between driver weight as well. So a lighter driver will get bigger batteries and more storage, and a smaller driver will get a bit of KERS. But
so
not
will they have a disadvantage then if you're a heavier driver?
If it makes the slightest bit of difference to the race, then yeah, they'd have less chance to defend against a lighter driver.
In the comments, Gavin's just pointed out, with all these different types, battery KERS, flywheel KERS, baby KERS, Max isn't really helping the whole cost-cutting thing if they're going to develop 15 million different kinds of systems.
Nobody's getting innovation. He wants innovation, and that's what he's got. He's
road
got
car
people
relevance.
Developing thousands and thousands of different parts at different times, all requiring testing, all requiring more track time, and he's trying to cut back on track time. So, you know, he can't have it always.
And there are a million other places that they can recover energy from, which presumably they'll get to in the future.
Right.
Because you can have it from the exhaust, from shock absorbers.
Yes. Now, that's quite interesting. I mean, the exhaust recovery we've talked about in the past, because there's a lot of heat wasted through the exhaust pipes. I wonder if the technical regulations are going to make it slightly harder because they've restricted what you can do in that area this year. But there's, I did hear this week, there's a lot of work going on with dampers and shock absorbers and anything that, but essentially any sprung part of the car can be used as an energy recovery device, a very small amount of energy, but every time a car goes over a bump, that generates some energy that could be captured and reused. So there's more that can be done. We're seeing the very, very, very early steps of Kurs developing Formula One, and it sounds like there's more to come.
And that's why we're all, it may be this, it may be that, we don't know. No one knows.
No, literally, absolutely no one has a clue.
It's fun finding out, though.
It's going to be a voyage of discovery, no question about it.
Well, that was our bit on Kurs. Hopefully, Bob will correct us if we've said anything wrong,
yep.
Because there was a lot of information coming our way.
And there's more to come. It's not. We have more information, and I believe I'm going to have to trawl through an awful lot of race car engineering back issues to try and validate some of my facts. Keep an eye on the blog. That's the best thing we can say. Got some images and some diagrams and some more geeky and some might say dull information coming at you.
Fantasy Racers.
During the last live show, we did the Fantasy Racers roll call, plugged it a little bit, join our league, it's all good. And people did join the league. In fact, we now have about as many people as we had at the end of last season, and it hasn't even started
already
yet.
Already signed up, already going. Okay, does that mean we need to do another roll call?
Certainly does.
Shall we get going?
Mini Races.
Ryanair Grand Prix.
Fairy Bubble Racing.
Side Podcast Land Champions Jordan F1.
Yorkshire F1.
Bring Back Canada.
Formula USA.
MCFC Races.
Team The Marshall.
DP Races.
Even Less Hopers.
I Want My USGP.
Shoresteel.com.au F1.
Racing for Last.
Accelerated Racing.
America F1.
Team Onomatopoeia. Give Me My Gold Medal.
Tutti Frutti.
Lea Cicari Racing.
Oh Rouge.
Spitfires at Dawn.
Typhoons at Tea Time.
Hurricanes in a Hurry.
Mosquitoes over Monza.
My Last Fokker Team.
Bring Back Scott Speed.
Shatner's Bassoon.
Acme Incorporated.
Schnell, Schnell, Schnell.
Scott's on Speed.
Blonde Pigeons.
Yankee Doodle Pigeon.
Fast Lane.
Scuderia by Tour.
Force Iberia.
TPC Racing.
Ripper F1.
Team Mario Tyson Kart.
CNH Racing.
Apex Slide.
Destiny Energy Density Racing.
Lamarck Brabourne.
Addictions Can Be Fun.
Shimano XC.
Big Red F1.
Forza Montreal.
Wah Wah Wee Wah.
Team Carousel.
The Donald Kiddix.
Red Magpie Racing.
Girardi F1.
R&R Racing.
Goes to 11.
NG Racing.
Bitten and Hisses.
Revenge for Canada F1.
Champion for 30 seconds.
Rattama Hatter.
Team Passion F1.
Force Honda B Team.
Black Flag Racing.
Sarah's Shambolicness.
Scuderia Sixth Cayman.
No F1 in Clue.
Canadian Kangaroo.
Scuderia Flying Fin.
Friendly Ghost Racing.
Ker-chow.
Rookie Racers.
Sloths Who Can't Drive.
Mike Graham Jr.
Latitudinal Inertia Redux.
Ajira Gajira Racing. I did notice when I was in there getting the names of the teams that Bordet is on the driver selection list now.
He's been added.
Woot!
Thank you, Danny. He's on the ball.
Yes.
So we're just missing two Honda drivers.
Yeah.
It seems more real when the drivers are in fantasy races, don't you find?
Yeah,
you
know, absolutely.
When Bordet's announced officially with a press release,
I didn't believe
it's just not quite right. But when he's in the fantasy races, you can pick him.
Yes.
And he's got some money assigned to him. Yeah.
So if you haven't joined up already, please do so.
And pick a sensible and short name.
You can pick whatever name you like. We should point out that there are a couple of unnecessary names that we didn't read out.
Nope. We don't encourage those. I'm liking words like truck. Really short names. Something like that would be really good.
Okay, not Tim. Not Team Onomatopoeia then.
Tim would be good.
Right.
Truck would be good.
We're going to be talking about it all year long.
Team
so
Bob.
You might as well.
If Bob's listening.
You might as well sign in, join up.
Yeah.
Get involved. All you have to do is pick drivers each week. It's good fun.
Free to join. Easy to do. And we're going to spend a lot of time on it this year, as we are already.
Yes.
As you may have noticed. So you're going to be missing out if you're not signed up already. Please do so.
All you have to do is if you head to the homepage, sidepodcast.com, there is a link on the right-hand side, and it's easy to do. If you need any help, we're always there.
Your call.
There hasn't been much feedback this week, but I did have one email that I just wanted to share because it's really important. It says, "Hi guys, just a quick note, RE, the news of Bordet's confirmed drive at STR. At least that will keep a certain podcast broadcaster happy, and therefore an entire podcast community happy. Can't wait for the season to start. It's going to be great, Nigel."
I have to say, thank you, Nigel. I have to say, I'm amazed that Bordet only just snuck into Good Week, Bad Week, and we didn't have a whole long, in-depth discussion
I've mentioned him about six times.
Leading back all the way to, you know, the trials and tribulations that started and how good he was last year.
The timeline.
Yeah, I half expected it to be some kind of interactive Bourdais fest this week. So I think he did very well to just squeeze it in. Although he did start the show. So, you know, he was first in there. But Nigel's right. You're very happy. We're very happy. It's all good news.
On the line now, we have Scott Woodwiss, who wants to talk to us about KERS.
I wanted to talk about KERS because I've been, whilst you guys have been talking about KERS, I've been looking on the internet and finding some stuff about certain things. I found one or two interesting points.
Not some facts, surely.
I've looked at basically regarding some of the teams. First one I found is apparently Ferrari have been testing at least three different types of KERS.
Okay, go on.
And their most unusual setup apparently was involved them by mounting the batteries in the nose of the car to try and get good weight distribution. But this caused problems and required running the high voltage wires alongside the cockpit. And they also tried the front mount battery, which also caused issues with the front wing. They've also had a system which they've been trying, which is the magnetic race system, which had technical problems. And a third configuration which didn't provide the performance benefit they wanted. And also, I've also found via the Autosport forums, I've found some updates. It's from mid-January, but it's updates on each team and what they've been up to with their KERS. McLaren's going for the electromechanical solution, which I can actually explain what that is. There is a quote down here, in fact, it's Ron Dennis explaining it.
Go ahead.
Find it. Apparently, it's a system which implies a flywheel or flywheels, so it could be more than one. And that's combined with a transducer, and that converts an electrical current to kinetic energy via the spinning flywheels and vice versa.
Yep.
And this electrical current goes to and from the engine via a motor generator.
Yes. So like a massive capacitor. It's interesting that Ron mentions one or more, because we were talking earlier in the week of whether or not two flywheels working in opposing directions would offer more stability than one flywheel rotating an offset in the center of gravity and the inertia from the chassis. So it's possible that, do you think McLaren are looking at a twin flywheel system?
I assume so. I mean, if Ron's mentioned it, then they're probably looking at that as one of the options they're having. But
dude, one thing we haven't touched upon, which just come back to me, I'm trying to think about it. I heard that braking, these systems on the rear wheels, they don't make the car stop any quicker, but they do lighten the load on the brakes. So people will be able to run lighter brake discs. I do wonder if it's going to be a problem warming up brakes in cold temperatures, because if the brakes aren't working as hard and they aren't getting as hot because this KERS system is kicking in at the same time the brakes come on, do you think people are going to have brake warming issues?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if there are filing issues, that they're going to be warming up the brakes and brake testing a lot more on the warm-up laps than they would normally. In fact, you'll probably see just kind of stopping and starting a lot more than they would be weaving.
Sure. Can you see warm-up laps being a bit of a problem? Because obviously, KERS is going to be really important at the start of the race into the first couple of corners. You're going to want to get a lot of that energy built up in a very slow warm-up lap. Can you see more accidents happening as they get to the grid?
It's a possibility. I mean, obviously, if you've got people stopping and starting a lot of the time, and it's only going to be a matter of time before someone gets caught out. And, you know, someone loses their reaction for a split second and they go slam into the back of another car, and that's pretty much their race is done with.
Especially if it's wet.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I mean, we saw that kind of thing, like, people stopping and starting. Good point is Fuji 2007, because also what happened there, Hamilton stopping and starting and ended up with Vettel and Webber colliding.
How much use do you think KERS is going to be in the rain?
I think if anyone's going to use it, they're going to be really brave to try and use it in the wet, because I don't think they dare use it out of corners, because that's just asking for trouble with wheel spin. So, and especially without traction control, even with, you know, a single wet tire with so many grooves on it, with KERS, it's not really going to help the situation that much, is it?
Good stuff. Alrighty, thanks for your call, Scott.
No problem.
Much appreciate that information.
Next up, we have Alex, who wants to talk to us about KERS.
It's a topical subject this evening.
Yes.
What's on your mind, mate?
Well, I was just thinking that, I mean, I know people have been saying about push to pass and knowing when it's being used. I think that sounds like a really good idea. And the only thing I could think of as a way of sort of showing it on screen, I thought it would be really neat, is like, you know those battery indicators that you get on your camera where it's got like three or four little lines which are for part of your battery? That's what they should have. For every single driver, you should see how much it's building up as it's sort of going along and they're recharging and you see it live. And then when they push the button, it suddenly whoops down to the bottom and they go faster. That would be brilliant. And that's all you need. And then everybody would understand, because it's like a big battery. And even if it is a flywheel, maybe you have a magical flywheel thing going faster when it's, if they've got one of those. But other than that, that's it. That would be really cool.
That is an incredibly good idea. I wonder if the teams are in any position to give that information to FOM and the race director, because at the moment, looking at the steering wheel, I can't even work out how the driver knows when he's got enough energy built up in order to hit the curves button, because at the moment it's just one single button.
Because if you push it too early, you're not going to have any in there.
I can only imagine. Do you think the pit are going to be on the radio all the race saying press it now, or is it going to be predetermined, or how are they going to know? Because there's no way at the moment of telling.
Well, I don't know. I think that's probably how they're going to have to do it. But this is the thing that I think is really wrong with Formula One, and I think this is comes to a really important point, which sort of Max did talk about in his lunch this week, which was that the thing with Formula One is it's got to be an entertaining sport, and all of this other stuff comes second to an extent. And I think where we go wrong is we say, well, let's put in this curse thing, or let's do this other cost-saving thing, or let's do this other thing to make us road relevant. The most important thing is making it understandable to the fans. And the simplest way to do that is to make it so that we go, oh, I understand this, I get this. Mm. So if they've got something like curse and they say, well, we could invent this thing, somebody should say to them, we're not allowed to put it on the car until you can work out a way of making it understandable by the fans.
Yep.
While it's going along. That's the rule one. Can you make it understandable by the fans? And if you can, then we can use it. If you can't, then forget about it and stop it.
Do you think there's a problem that Max has mandated that this happen, that curves be created and is used in the, you know, it's in the rules and it's an option for the teams and they've got to invest all this money, and some are interested in doing it, some are not interested in doing it. But nobody, as far as I'm aware, has ever asked Bernie what he thinks of it. And as Bernie provides the graphics, do you think he even gives a damn? And where do you think Bernie stands on this? And because it comes down to him to get the information to us, it has to go through him. Do we know if he's even shown any interest in this?
Well, we've heard him say that he doesn't really think that Kurz is much cop and he doesn't really care about it. So, yeah, you're right. It probably, instead of my three little battery sections, it would probably be three little medals. and they'll be wearing away every time they use one. I don't know. I think it is a shame because, it is divided at the top there and you can't do it. I think it is just down to what we really want is something that is understandable by the fans, something that people can make sense of, something that people can engage with. And yeah, as you say, once you've got this kind of division at the top, it sort of isn't going to happen, and that's a shame.
Ollie said in the comments, to be fair, FOM graphics improved in 2008, but did they improve enough?
They did. Well, he did invest a bit of money into it. We got more information and it was quite useful.
But would it be enough to transfer to this year? I mean, can you imagine if James Allen was still commentating
and explaining curse to us?
How many times would he have to explain curse to us?
There was a question, I think, from Flipster earlier on in the comments, which I read, and I don't know the answer to this, but I think the answer is yes. And the question was, can curse be used in qualifying? And I think the answer is yes, but I don't
That's
know
a good question.
if we've had that confirmed. Do you know, Alex?
I don't know, other than I read the question and thought that was a really good question too. I really don't know. I'm sorry about that.
The thing is, I mean, in qualifying, it's going to be more important because that's when your one lap is really going to make the difference. And we're going to need to know who's got it, who's running it. Do they have big curves, baby curves, anything in between? And where do they stand on it? It's going to take us a couple of races to figure out who's where. Because, you know, if there's a lot of crashes in Melbourne, we may not know till they get back to Europe who's actually got a decent curve system and who's making the most out of it.
It's just so complicated. And I mean, as Christine rightly says, I mean, you know, it was. I mean, it's a hard job that James was trying to do last year, and he didn't do it very well, particularly. But you know, trying to explain all of the stuff that was going on, and people trying to understand what was happening, and people arriving mid-season and still not sure what's going on with qualifying. Imagine with curves, it's just going to be a nightmare. Even okay, with the new team, what are they going to do to explain this? Because even us seasoned guys won't know what's going on because we're just not going to get the information. So they have to speculate. And to speculate, they have to explain what's going on. And it's just going to be a nightmare. They just really need to clear it all up a lot. And I think it'd be really quite an important thing.
Well, the other problem is that the KERS thing, I mean, it's an ongoing process and it happens each lap and every lap, but on the TV, you're only watching a certain battle at the time, so they can only show a certain amount of information.
Well, you can't have 20 batteries.
Exactly, and if you cut to someone else, you're not going to know at what state they are, and it's going to be difficult to...
I wouldn't fancy being a TV director this year.
No. Or a commentator, really.
No, but the TV directors have to cut to the action. But if you've got two cars, one car following another car on track, normally it's pretty easy. You cut to that guy, and if something else is going on, someone's closer, you cut to that guy. But if there's a potential that some guy who's farther back than the action you're watching could has more KERS than the two guys you're watching. Say the two guys who are on screen at the moment don't have any KERS, any energy left to use, but there's another battle going on that's farther apart, but one guy has loads of energy and he might use it. What does the director do? When does he cut?
Well, this comes back to the thing with, I mean, I was sort of joking about these 20 batteries, but I think if you have that as an online screen on the internet and you can have a look at it, somebody can easily be watching that. I mean, I did think, I read that comment that you recommended me, if that makes sense as a sentence, from Jonathan Noble on Autosport. Mm. Unfortunately, subscription is required. Which was really about how the internet can change things, and certainly with the TV footage, so many different bits of footage. I really loved the idea that came from the end of that, which is that you could almost watch a live stream being edited by fans. I thought, you know, side podcast TV version of Formula One, we could watch that, and we could have commentary, we could choose the best commentary, we could choose the best set of video, we could choose the best mix. And if somebody said, hey, look, I can do this better, I can choose where the right shots are going to do, and better than somebody else can do it, I think people will eventually decide on the best mix, you know.
Yep.
And if it takes adverts to do it, then maybe that will be the thing.
That might work well. I mean, you'd need a team of people to do it. You'd need, you know, the amount of people we have on live comments and do it. You couldn't, if you were a single fan and you were just watching it on your browser, you'd struggle. But if there was enough of us watching enough of the action, you could make a composition that was better than the TV director, the official TV director. So that is very interesting.
It's a network effect. It would actually be so much better than what you see now, and you could easily do it sort of like a Wikipedia, but for video
live streaming. I like it. You're onto something there. I appreciate that. That's good. Anything else you got for us, Alex?
No, I don't think I've hugged it enough recently, so I'll bow out to anybody else.
Right. Cheers, buddy.
So, thanks. Cheers, buddy.
On the line now, we've got Gavin, who's wants for a change. He doesn't want to talk about KERS. And he'd rather talk about and speculate on USF1. What's on your mind, mate?
I've just been obviously been reading all the news items and posts that have been floating around the internet about USF1, and I think it's kind of interesting because it seems to be more than just a vicious rumour, this one. I mean, we've got some serious people behind it. I believe it's Peter Windsor, Sergio Rinland, and what was the other guy's name? Joan, is it Villadel Pro, I think?
Wow. You're a brave man trying that name. Yes.
I'm relying on the Murray Walker pronunciation there, so I could be wrong.
That's absolutely fine. You're right in the sense that it's been long running. It was rumoured well over a year ago, and you know it keeps coming back. What do you make of it then? Do you think it's a goer, or do you think it's just nothing but hot air?
Well, I think with the name suggested to be involved with it, and none of them have denied it yet, there's got to be something going on. And I'm just wondering, with them being based in the US... There is quite a lot of there's like a Silicon Valley for NASCAR in around Charlotte area, but also I think it's in Braselton or Atlanta in Georgia. We've got Panos, who may or may not be well known to some of you guys here, but Panos are the sports car people that made the Le Mans car and set up the ALMS, the American Le Mans Series. But
okay.
They also were involved in making the Champ cars, the very last Champ cars, and also the Super League Formula cars. So they have got experience making single seaters, and I'm just wondering part of the reason why they're setting this up in the US is to involve someone like Panos and maybe another manufacturer involved in the setup.
Okay, yes, that seems like a very reasonable idea. So these, but are there not going to be problems? I mean, the names you've mentioned there haven't had any experience with building Formula One cars, have they? Have Panos ever been in Formula One?
Not to my knowledge, no.
So isn't it going to be a bit of a leap from Champ Car, which is not the most sophisticated of cars, up to Formula One? And can they do it within 12 months? Because that's a short space of time to set up a Formula One team.
Well, we've had Formula One teams set up in a lot shorter space of time.
In Europe, using existing facilities, though. If you're talking about Super Aguri, they picked up an existing Arrow chassis and just painted it. This is different from creating something from scratch, isn't it?
Definitely. But 12 months, I mean, it's different to a champ car, definitely, but I think 12 months for clever people like that shouldn't be too much of a problem. They could get it on the grid, definitely.
Okay, so you're saying you're on the side of it being this is a goer. This is, you think it's going to happen, yeah. And it's not just Max essentially trying to create something to pretend that Formula One's in rude health.
I think there's potential for it to happen, and also the other name that was linked was with Joan Villadelpera was the Epsilon. Is it Epsilon Uskadi or Uskadi?
Yep.
They've built their own closed roof prototype for Le Mans. Which unfortunately didn't finish the race due to technical problems, but they're also in the European Le Mans series. So we're talking about, between the two of these groups, we've got a lot of technical knowledge, and I think we've got enough to make a Formula One team here. We don't know whether they're going to be a constructor or not yet. I mean, they may end up just being a customer car.
Do you see any potential chassis lining up to supply them?
Two from Honda.
Yes. Where do you reckon then Max has got 12 teams for 2010 from?
Well, there's still ProDrive. ProDrive have also said that they wanted to be in Formula 1 if the costs got cut. And the main guy who trying to cut the costs is Max.
Right.
So he's putting two together that he's reduced the cost. Dave Richards is going to bowl up, buy a couple cars and start an operation.
Alrighty. Gavin, thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
And hope to speak to you soon. Hello, RG.
All right.
How's it going, mate?
I'm fine.
We're going to talk about Croft, which is not particularly Formula 1 related. But you have a personal interest in this. I mean, I'm concerned about what's going on there. Can you fill us in on what's happened? You're not far away from the circuit. Can you fill us in on what's happened recently and why it's made the news?
Well, basically, Croft, the circuit, being the complaint by one of the local residents, who was the wife of the former director at Croft, filed a lawsuit, which eventually won for £700,000. Against Croft.
And her argument is it's breach of the peace, it's disturbing her basically where she lives and causing her lots of headaches and that held up in court.
In theory, yes, but the real explanation is that it's just really part of a nasty divorce, that she's against the husband who owned Croft, and it's really hitting it back on the circuit.
Right.
Hitting where it hurts, really.
I see. So it's a personal vendetta against her ex-husband, I guess, and then it spilled out into and affected all of motorsport.
Yeah.
And you live nearby, and what does it mean to you? Does it mean, what is Croft going to lose as a result of this case going through?
If Croft does go through, the minute it probably only restricts and track days, which wouldn't be affected that much. £700,000 is probably a lot of money as well, so it's probably going to affect in the British Touring Car Championships and the Superbikes, which I won't get to see then, which would be bad for me if I want to watch racing.
And I know Mons has had some issues with this and they've got through it by the skin of their teeth on a couple of occasions. What's your take on it? You think that basically that residents shouldn't be complaining if they choose to live next to a racing circuit, they should put up with the noise?
I mean, it's their choice. They should know that if they go to a place where there is a racing track, they're going to have to expect there's going to be a lot of noise there.
It doesn't do the image of motorsport in the UK any good either. I mean, with the British GP in doubt, it's not looking good.
Croft's never going to host a British Grand Prix anyway, but if it does spread onto these tracks like Donington, if that, I don't know, that's reasonably close to places. I mean, that might get complaints from residents about the noise about Formula One. So that could be a problem. And if that's happened, then they're not prepared to go back to Silverstone.
I mean, in the comments, you know, I think everybody's agreeing with you. Ollie said it's like buying a house on a floodplain and then complaining when you get wet. Jeremy said it's just a NIMBY problem. It's, you know, another not in my backyard. And they have the same problem in Australia, and it looks like it's just spilling over to the UK.
Some of these circuits have been there since, Mons has been there since the 1920s. Croft's been there since before the First World War. Fair enough, it was like a new track which had built next to it. I think that would be a reasonable excuse, but it shouldn't really be allowed.
No, I agree. It does sound like it's going to be a problem. It's going to run and run. I really hope that Croft have the money and the backing and the ability to take it farther and fight this, because, I mean, they're not just doing it for themselves, in effect, they're doing it for all the racetracks in this country and for fans that, like yourself, that are going to miss out on, or potentially have the chance of missing out on BTC races, because if they run out of money or they run out of funding, you know, it doesn't matter whether or not the circuit's closed down, the racing just won't carry on there. Okay, thanks for your call, RG. Thanks for bringing it to our attention, because I know from your comments that it's something that's affected you personally. And I think it's bad for motorsport generally. It's bad for this country. Cheers for your call.
Okay, bye.
On the line now we have Stephen Roy, and on his mind is carbon fibre. What have you got to talk to us about today, Stephen?
A couple of quick points first on this USF1 team before going to carbon fibre.
No problem.
Steve Nichols of McLaren moved to the States at the end of last year, supposedly to work on a NASCAR project, which no one could understand why he would go to NASCAR.
I remember it.
I'm just wondering if he's maybe involved in this, and that would give them a sort of top-level technical guy from F1 with proper F-lanes.
You could be onto something there, because he said he just fancied a new challenge in life after working pretty much his entire life in Formula 1, and suddenly he wanted to downgrade to what is essentially buses running around in circles. Not to offend the NASCAR fans or anything, you know, while I'm at it. So do you think he's sneakily involved in that? Do you think as part of McLaren, or just something that he was interested in going to take part in?
Well, I'd imagine more likely that he's just moved out of McLaren and gone to them as a way of getting a sort of good payday before he packs it in completely.
Yeah.
But there is a possible tie-up there, because one of the things that came out in the engine freeze, one of the first thoughts I had on that when it happened, Max originally wanted a 10-year engine freeze. If, you know, the logical thing to look at that is, if teams have an engine freeze for 5 years, say, 5 years into a 10-year freeze, if you're a new team with a new engine, then you haven't got 5 years frozen development. You've got all that development in there.
Yep.
So if there's a testing ban on just now, any new team doesn't have a testing ban. So if they were to do a deal with McLaren for, or say, a Mercedes engine and KERS system and whatever, they've not entered the championships. So there's no restrictions on them testing it as part of their car.
Gotcha. Okay, that would be very sneaky. Presumably that wouldn't help McLaren, because they couldn't then feed that back into their own project, but they could have something ready for the next time the freeze was relaxed.
The KERS systems aren't frozen. It's only engines that are frozen.
Good point.
So, you know, it also means they could find a way of getting a lot of running and, you know, getting sort of life terms of things, because although they can do that on simulation, it's not the same as battering around the circuit all day, every day.
Sure.
And there's still the question of what Mr. DiResta is doing, since he was the only person not named in Mercedes team. The ART GP2 team has named their drivers, and he's not in that, and that's the team that Mercedes and McLaren placed Lewis Hamilton with. And I've just had a discussion with Ali and Ora in the comments, and she reckons that the contract situation with the Force India drivers can't be changed now, because the contracts will be with the contracts recognition board. So he's going to be doing something, and it just seems an interesting little way of getting around all these little problems.
It does. It very much does. So you're in the camp that basically says this is going to happen, is likely to happen, and it's not just a figment of someone's hyperactive imagination.
No, I'm totally clueless as to whether it's going to happen or not. It's just a nice little conspiracy theory to build up before all these facts happen to fit.
Okay. Carbon fibre.
Yeah, it's something Clive came up with on his site, F1 Insight, where he's done a couple of posts on things that can improve Formula 1 and cut costs. And he came out with this one, I think it was yesterday, where he said, why don't we just ban carbon fibre? I thought it's an absolutely fabulous idea.
What did they use before they used carbon fibre?
Well, he was talking mainly about chassis and what they used, an aluminium honeycomb. So you had effectively two sheets of aluminium with a sort of cross-section honeycomb centre in the middle, and it was all sort of bonded together. So if you use aluminium on its own, it's flexible. If you use the honeycomb, it's flexible. But if you bond them all together, you can get fairly good rigidity.
Is it safe? Is it as safe as carbon fibre? Because obviously carbon fibre is legendarily strong when hit, and it compresses in a way that, in a safe way, so it absorbs the energy.
That is precisely my argument. My argument is keep carbon fibre for the tubs, for the chassis, for the safety, but things like suspensions, wings, all that kind of thing.
Steering wheels.
Make them out of aluminium. You know, front wings this year, we're all expecting front wings to shatter as soon as a wheel touches them. But if you make them out of aluminium, they bend a little bit. They're not as efficient, but the guy's not necessarily off to the pits every time somebody comes near him. But one of the points I've made on his site, I was looking at the McLaren they had at the Autosport show where they had it on the podium, so it was eye level.
Mm.
And despite the number of, you know, the amount of time I've spent looking at Formula One cars, I was absolutely gobsmacked at how thin the wishbones and so on were. Well, if you make them metal and mandate a round section, then that just chops a whole load of aero testing out, because these people are making them thin for aerodynamic reasons. They're also looking at the best way to angle each and every suspension member.
Right.
That is a huge amount of cost. You take all of that out, and you're taking a massive amount of cost out for no disadvantage as far as spectators or anyone else is concerned. The car will be slightly less technically capable than it would be, but what difference does that make? And it also means that when you have an accident, you're not going to have carbon shrapnel all over the place because the tub is not going to break. You know, all the suspension things that break, wings that break, these stupid hubcap things they have on the cars, which should be banned anyway now, all of those things that shatter, diffusers and the like, none of that is going to break anymore. So you're going to have an accident, you're going to have a little bit of sweeping up to do, but then the track's clean, you're not going to be slashing tyres all over the place.
Sure.
So I think Clive's onto something.
Understood. Okay, well, I can't think of one good reason to argue against that theory. It sounds like a good idea. Thank you, Stephen. And thank you to Clive for bringing up that suggestion in the first place.
Housekeeping.
We've been trying out some new things on F1 Minute, including a massive great big picture.
You're a big fan of photographs.
Yes.
And you're a big fan of big photographs.
Yep.
So F1 Minute on a daily basis, around the same time and with some association to the podcast.
Yep.
You publish a news-related big picture.
Yeah, it's nice because quite often you see little pictures with news articles, but they're only little.
Yes.
And I quite like the idea of seeing a big picture.
With a little bit of news.
It's just a little
paragraph.
It
turns everything on its head. Borrowed the idea from Boston.com.
Well, yes, they have the original The Big Picture, which is amazing.
First came to our attention when they covered the Singapore Grand Prix last year. I think Alex pointed it out to us. We've subscribed and we've loved it every single day.
So we trialled the idea of moving it onto F1 Minute.
For 2 weeks.
And, well, we love it.
Yeah.
And we hope other people do too.
It's good.
Seems to be some positive feedback, so we're going to keep it up.
It's a bandwidth-heavy website, but it's not too bandwidth-heavy, so we can keep it going. Shouldn't cause too many problems. And do check it out. How do people get to it if they're interested in looking at your big picture?
Well, I would go to f1minute.com and there's a little thumbnail in the corner.
Right.
And you just click on that.
You can't miss it.
And you can see today's or whatever day's picture.
A little bit of a selection of that picture in the corner of the website.
You remember our show from the Porsche Centre with the Mark Webber interview?
Last week.
Yes.
I do recall that. I don't have that bad a short-term memory.
Okay, just checking. Well, it's no big surprise, but the Mark Webber Forum, they quite like that show.
We mentioned them last year.
Yes.
Big fans of the Mark Webber Forum. Nice guys. They've been sending us loads and loads and loads of links this week. Obviously, they're all big Mark Webber fans. I think they quite enjoyed the interview. And I just wanted really ought to give them a shout back just because they've given us so much love. MarkWebberForum.com.
It's a good forum. Lots of nice people.
Yeah.
And you can talk about Mark Webber.
Yes. Sounds like they've got a busy day ahead on Monday. We're recording this on Sunday and it's the RB5 launch in the morning.
If you've been on the website at all this week, you may have noticed the character cup.
It's been going on a little bit.
We thought we'd have a little bit of fun and start up a cup because it kind of started that I thought, well, we could compare teammates and see how they're going to do this season.
Yep.
And then I thought, no, let's just compare everybody.
Well, yes, that was actually, I think Ollie kind of kiboshed that plan. Because
he started a series and I thought of it. And then I realised that Ollie was doing it already and I thought, well, I don't want to duplicate what he's doing.
Better job than we do.
Yeah.
So, if you're into comparing driver teammates, do check out Blog F1.
Absolutely.
But we have something slightly different, which is, and it caused a little bit of confusion at the beginning because we didn't really explain it too well. It's not a best driver poll. It's not a challenge to find the best driver in Formula 1 or who you think should win the most things or who's got the best, you know, who best controls understeer and oversteer. It's the best character.
Character cup.
In Formula 1.
And we're recording this on Sunday and we've just started round 2.
Yes.
So you've already missed the preliminary heats.
Yes.
And today's, I think, is Rosberg versus Kubica.
Bit of a shocker. Hamilton and Massa both out in round 1.
In the first round.
Not expected.
Ridiculous.
But today, Vettel... No, who is it? Sorry, Rosberg and Kubica today.
Yes, but probably by the time this is edited, it will be someone else.
Yes. If you haven't already checked out the website and voted, please do. Who do you think, from those remaining, is the best character in Formula 1? So either on track, off track, doesn't really matter, in press conferences, away from the track, in nightclubs, whatever you want to vote on. As a person, who do you think the best Formula 1 driver is?
And the final thing we wanted to mention is the side pod map.
Yes.
Which came about because Bassano Clapper
said
he wanted a map that dots where listeners are.
Yeah. Another one of these things, someone mentioned in the comments, we have it up and running. I think he said it one morning last week. Oh, we want a map. We've got a palatial map. Is it palatial? I forget what they're called. But yeah, if you, how do people get to this map? Because we've got over, is it almost 50 people now listed? Everybody gets
a lot of dots.
Yeah, you've got a lot of dots on the map. And how do people find this map?
It is hosted on the wiki at the moment, which is wiki.sidepodcast.com.
And if you go to About Side Podcast, you can see listener map. And we have to thank everybody who's put a little pin in there and said, this is where I live. Lots of people who don't actually comment on the site have gone and put a pin in there.
Yes, we've seen some new names.
There's lots of lurkers who are just reading, because we've only mentioned it on the blog. So presumably they found it on the blog and they've gone and put their pin in the map. So thank you very much to everybody who we've never really mentioned before. At some point, we'll probably have to do a shout out for everybody on the map. But if you've not put yourself on there, you'd like to have your country and your location represented as a Side Podcast listener, please go to the wiki and stick a pin in it.